CliffCentral.com.
Wenn Höckering says, he'll never bomb this place. Wie heil, heil, right in Höckering's face.
Good morning, everybody. Day 9,346 of the coronavirus. Yes, we've been locked down for so long. Humanity has not used certain public lavatories for such a long time. They're actually smelling good. How's that for a thought? I know what's gross is a public lavatory. That's right. This morning I'm joined by my compatriots in arms. We have Sia Sangweni in the Durban office. We have Mbulelo Tinta in the Joburg studio. And we have Gord Laws in his house. And Fundo Tladla's running things from behind the scenes as well. So what's happening, Gordo? How are you, dude?
You know, I was asleep about 15 minutes ago and now I'm on the show. This is how we should always do it.
I know, isn't it great? I was thinking that when I, because I woke up early enough this morning to actually be like a human instead of some fucking monster who only, you know, lives during the dark, dark hours of the day. And also, he's always rushing. So I got up this morning. I made myself a cup of coffee. I had a shower. There was no rush. And I thought, you know what? I've still got 15 minutes before they're expecting me on the show.
What I would have done with my extra 15 minutes I'm not used to having in the morning.
You would have slept.
No.
What?
But it is nice. It is nice.
You filth. You dirty pig.
I would have said prayers.
Watch your head.
But I found that there's this weird thing that's happening to me lately. And I'm not sure whether it's unrelated or maybe just tangentially related to the current lockdown earlier than I ever would want to. Mm-hmm. Like an hour and a half earlier than I normally would.
Yeah.
And then I can't get back to sleep. And I'm like, but why? I went to bed at the right time and now like I'm tired. This has happened to me maybe in the last 2.5 weeks. This happened to me maybe 3 times where I'm just like up at sparrow fart and then I'm like tired the whole day.
Some people are obviously having trouble sleeping because they're anxious. I mean, that's the reality.
No, it's not that. I go to sleep like normal.
Yeah.
That was earlier.
Hmm. Can I suggest that we take your picture off for the next little while? Because we're experiencing some kind of a lag on the internet, and it's
mine.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world.
If
you go to the bottom, there's a little camera. If you switch the camera, hello, Gordo. There we go. Perfect. If you could still see us, then that's fine. But I don't really need to.
Just you and Umbi. I would only if I could choose the person I would see is here. And he's the only one I can't see, so not ideal, but that's okay.
Sorry about that. Okay, so Mbulelo, how are you this morning? What's going on your mind this morning? What are you thinking about? What's changed from yesterday?
Not much. It's another day and no zombies yet. Really disappointing.
Oh, no.
Really, really disappointing.
I stocked up on ammo and everything. I bought a sword, a few years ago in anticipation of the zombie apocalypse, and here we are with nothing. It's very disappointing. But I do want to ask you something specific, Mbulelo. You were watching Cyril's address 2 nights ago, you know, night before last.
Sure.
And you picked up something which I thought was really observant, and now I cannot get it out of my mind. The president, how do you describe this problem?
Look, people are going to have to go watch it again, but there was just too much shirt at the bottom. So one of two things is happening with
on his arms, right?
Yeah, so he had a white shirt and the coat, but the coat was too short on the arms. His jacket is too short on the arms. So one of two things is happening. Either every since the last time and his delts are just massive now and the jacket's just too tight. Or he's got a horrible tailor, and I don't know if I want to have a president to be a tailor.
James Bond would never go out looking like that, basically.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
His name is his president, and Cyril Ramaphosa at the stage. If he's going to wear a jacket, that's way too short.
No, you are me.
Oh, see,
first, we actually realize you have a soul.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now we realize you're a bit of a fashionista too.
Look at this. We're discovering new things about Mbulelo every day. Okay, Gordo.
To get it together.
Gordo, what would you love to do full time, you know, in terms of actual work, your dream thing to sit and work on all day for a job? Because this has given a lot of us ideas. And I know this is something you spoke to me about not so long ago.
I there's in between what would you do with your squillions if you won the lotto?
Yeah.
What kind of yacht would you buy? Mm-hmm. And like, if you could choose what your job was that you were like reasonably stable, what would that job be? And I have a feeling you might kind of be in that job, GC, but like, I kind of realized in, I don't know if I'd call it a blinding flash, but like there's things I've wanted to do my whole life, but I've always had a reasonable modicum of excuse to say that I really don't have the time and I'm working on horrible grown-up advertising things that in some way I love and in some way I hate. And I've just always wanted to make children's books. So now I'm setting up a company and I'm like working really hard at it and I'm well inspired. And I have this weird feeling for the first time in a long time that like, intermission. I'm working at it like all day. And then I kind of like, we'll do dinner or whatever. And I'll be like, right, cool. Well, I'm going to work on it some more. And, you know, hopefully I won't be up too late because I need to get up tomorrow and work on this.
Wow. You sound completely motivated.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. And like, it's not as if I've never enjoyed something I've done before. It's not as if I've hated every minute of working, but it always feels like work. It feels like I'm doing something I otherwise wouldn't want to be doing so that someone else can give me money. And that's an amazing feeling. And, you know, I've started this company. I'm publishing that poem that you liked is the first one we're getting out. And we've done one for the UN.
Yeah.
And when I say we, it's me. And I've got a mate who's helping me with I've brought on a couple of people that I'll be paying to do a few things, like setting up the e-commerce side of it and a bit of layout work. But I'm illustrating and writing them myself. The first one is The People Who Forgot to Be Nice. I'll have pre-sales open for those by next week.
Cool.
And if I can make this bloody thing pay me enough money to not happens, it'll be amazing. So there's a real feeling of purpose to doing a thing that you really like, really, really want to make it work. And I think so many people, the point that I wanted to get to for in terms of discussing with other people is that so many people can't answer that question.
Yeah.
Like I've asked so many people, like, what would you love to do? Because everyone's like, I hate my job. I've always got to be there on time. Either like teams on remote work, teams driving me crazy with the constant alerts. And other people are like, you know, I miss the office. But how many people have their job and you can see it about them?
Well, I mean, the two things that have sprung to mind on this. First of all, well, think about this question and I'll come back to your answer in a second. But what are the books that inspired you as a kid? Because I can tell you without even thinking.
Don't say it now.
But just as a kid. Yeah, no, we'll get to it in a second. But the other thing is I've been asked to do something which I think might be quite cool too. There's a group called Save the Children South Africa, and they've actually asked a few people to read stories online to kids. And kids who maybe, you know, they're living somewhere and they've only got a cell phone or their mom has got a smartphone or whatever, they can actually hear a story by someone who's either famous or who can really tell a story well. And these stories have been written by other people. And I was contacted.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I was contacted by this guy called Yanni Horn, and he is at SaveTheChildren.org. And he asked me to read a story for kids. Now, they last about 3 or 4 minutes, these stories, but they're absolutely amazing. And all of them have some kind of a, you know, some kind of wisdom, some kind of life lesson.
Lesson, yeah.
Without being preechy, and they're just cute stories. And
the best.
And for people who can't read, they can still hear. It's one of the things I always say to people about podcasts that makes it so cool. Is even if you can't read and you're not the most literate person, or maybe you are literate, but you just find reading is a chore, then listening is available to you. And I'm going to be doing that. So what are the kids' books that changed your life and the kids' books that you look to for inspiration? Because all authors of children's books got their inspiration from some other author of children's books.
100%.
What were they?
Is the question on the table. Well, for me, it started with Dr. Seuss and it continued with Dr. Seuss. And I realized that when I was in my late 20s, give or take 10 years ago, and I was still working at FHM, I had this moment that literally stopped me in my tracks where I was like, oh my God, Dr. Seuss. And I've just realized that everything I love to do is Seuss. Like, I have this like innate love of rhyme, whether that's and rapping at a drum and bass show or just writing silly stories that rhyme and make people laugh. And a rhythm, love of silly cartoons that are always kind of like wacky and weird. And I wouldn't say it's a lifelong mission to plagiarize, but more just like deeply, it's embedded in my literary DNA of work that I put out. And even like my love of talking shit while people listen. I remember I was in Miss Kathy sub A class in Musenberg Junior School, and I took this book, the Butter Battle book, which I can see from where I'm sitting now, and I read it to the whole class, and it like went off. It felt like it took me hours, but the book is like, it takes 10 minutes.
Did you read the whole thing?
And
to class?
The audience enjoyed it. It's one of his longer books, but a long Dr. Seuss book is still a short book. I read it to the class, and they really enjoyed it, and I got to sit there and be the oak. You know, I had a little audience. Did a little talk, and it's just profoundly impactful.
All right,
and
Gord,
since then,
Gord,
I've gone back and revisited a lot of this stuff.
Just quickly, this conversation we'll come back to in a minute. Can you just can you leave the conversation and just click on it and come back again? For some reason, the connection's really terrible. I don't know what's going on this morning. So just leave and then click on the link that Bulelo sent you and just come back. Thanks. So some days these connections are perfect. Other days they're terrible. I remember as a kid reading Roald Dahl, which I fucking love Roald Dahl so much. That was always one of my favorites. Asterix. And again, these are graphic novels more than they are. You know, I mean, Asterix was a cartoon, but it was just this incredibly intense immersion into the ancient world, which I think also colored my love for history. I was fascinated by the different tribes and what Romans were like and what Gauls were and the magic potion and druids. And, you know, it gives you an idea, a snapshot of history, and through a kid's eyes, it's just enough to get you really excited about the actual subject matter. Man, I love that.
I've never known how to say his name, but Uderzo has recently passed away.
Uderzo died, I think, last year. He was obviously an Italian family, but he grew up in France. And Goscinny is the other guy.
I thought it was like 2 weeks ago.
Really? I know Goscinny died a couple of years ago.
March 2020, last week.
Oh, wow. That is terrible. I didn't even know that.
One of Zapiro's cartoons was kind of done in Asterix style
as a tribute.
As a tribute. And they made a new Asterix book, which wasn't bad. With I think it was Uderzo and Goscinny's daughter or niece or something. They released one a few years ago for the first time in a very long time. But I remember my grandfather, someone who the fake news grandfather, he explained to me that. All of the names had like of all of the kind of like nationality and that had like some special clever signature. Any better, by the way?
No, it's not any better. Everybody, all of you, just leave. I'm going to switch this off and we start again because it's going to drive me crazy. So I've just dumped a whole lot of them. Hopefully, they'll be able to get back on. Bulelo, just if you can send me that link again. I think I've deleted it, and I just want to get this whole thing sorted out properly. It drives me crazy when we have lag on the internet. And I've got a perfect internet clip. My internet connection is perfect. It is perfect. Everything here is perfect. It's the greatest internet. It's tremendous. I'm doing a great job with my internet. But everybody else is seemingly connecting in a complicated way. By the way, this is not a good time for Donald Trump. Jesus, this guy is screwing up left, right, and center. Everything he said at all these press conferences is so embarrassing. Don't get me wrong, I like it when he goes at the media, and a lot of them deserve it because they've got just the most awful questions, and they're sarcastic, and they just don't want to hear anything from Donald Trump, even if it's the truth. And then you got, you know, these very reasonable people sitting there from the press, and he's looking for a fight with people who some of the time don't have a bad intention. It's just, it's so frustrating, man. You see him, he's floundering, and clearly this is a tough time for everybody, including leaders. We tend to think that leaders don't have, that they somehow are superhuman and they never make mistakes. But even the best leader in the world at this time would be flapping a little bit. And I'm forgiving of that. But this guy is just, he's not doing himself any favors. You know, the less he says, the better. And he's got all those brilliant doctors like Anthony Fauci and the rest of them there. I just wish he'd let them talk. Just get out of the way. We don't need you correcting people who are expert. Just stay out of the way. And we know you've got good intentions. We know you want to save American lives. We know you want to get the economy back up and running. Guy just doesn't seem to get that. I want to go to an email quickly while we're waiting for Bulelo to send me that link. This is from Stefan, who lives in, well, he used to live in Germany. I actually met up with him, and so did Pumi and Greg when we were in Germany, in Berlin, not so long ago. He says, "Hey, Gareth, I hope Carl is keeping you company." Yeah, Carl is mostly just sleeping. That's what dogs do, I'm afraid. Not great company. "Glad to share my story, or I could call in, whatever you think is best. I use Google Hangouts frequently. A quick rundown of what we've been through since I was last in the studio. Work relocated me from Berlin to Brisbane in Australia in October. My dog finally arrived, and that's at the end of January. After 6 months in quarantine, this poor animal, one day before I was made redundant and was told I have 2 months to find a new job before I get deported again. Can you imagine that? The COVID-19 hit and companies slowed down their hiring practices and I started shitting bricks. I went all out and had over 50 interviews in the last few weeks. Yesterday, I was offered a new role in the same company, launching a new department for the Asia Pacific region with a higher salary and my visa changed to permanent residency, so I've got no more deportation." Oh, man. Can you imagine the nerves? "Might be something worth sharing. Doubling down during hardships is important, and my philosophy of not having a plan B keeps paying off. In other news, COVID-19 is well regulated in Queensland, Brisbane." That's right. "Which has a population around 2.6 million, but it is spread out well and we're allowed to exercise outside. We're allowed to walk our dogs on the beaches and play golf, which is a perfect sport for social distancing. So it makes things bearable and I'm happy to be here and not in Berlin anymore. Stay safe and regards from Bris Vegas." That's what he's calling Brisbane. Jesus, Stefan, that sounds hectic, man. Imagine you move to a country. Finally, your dog gets out of quarantine and you're about to settle into your new job and they make you redundant. In these times, this is going to be a story a lot of people have. But his lesson, and I think we will get him on the line at some point, his lesson seems to be, you know, when things are going badly, just hold on and double down. Squeeze in. He did 50 interviews in like 2 weeks. And then he was offered a new role in the same company. Thank God. And he's got a higher salary. His visa's been changed to permanent residency. There is good in the world, and not everything ends in tears. We need to hear stories like that at this time. So thanks, Stefan. I think that is absolutely one of the better stories that's made my day. And then I want to go to one from Barry, who often emails us. Barry says, "If you get stopped by the police or law enforcement, be sure to take note of their name tag, rank, call sign on the vehicle's door or registration plate." Why is Barry saying this? Well, what is going on is that there are certain law enforcement individuals who are conveying the wrong information to the public, i.e. that you, an ordinary citizen, need a permit to go shopping. You do not need a permit to go shopping, all right? Someone says, where's your permit to go shopping? You don't need one. It'll help to know who these law enforcement individuals are so the correct information can be given to them. By the way, I'm sharing this in my personal capacity. I'm not a spokesman for the police. It'll go a long way to soften our workload if we miss if these misinformed law enforcement individuals aren't corrected. Absolutely. Thank you very much for that, Barry. So if you want to look out for stuff concerning the law enforcement don't always just, you know, it's amazing to me how, like, in a time of crisis, everybody suddenly believes the police, and you see perfectly reasonable people backing the police when they beat someone up. That would never happen if you weren't feeling under pressure, if you weren't responding to this crisis. You would never stand up for police brutality. And the kind of people who do are revealing a bit of a fascist tendency in my mind. You know, it's not surprising when it comes from Godrich Gardy at the EFF. It is surprising when it comes from the old lady who lives, you know, in suburbia. And you think, sure, old lady, I can see how, you know, Adolf Hitler got votes from perfectly sensible people once, because they didn't think it was so bad. Oh, you know, these people are out of control, and I don't mind if the police get a little heavy-handed sometimes. Well, I think it's never acceptable, for what it's worth. And we had this conversation with Pumi yesterday. Mbulelo, have you sent that link to me? I want to reconnect you guys. Don't know where you are at the moment, and it's not coming through. I got a great article about Albert Uderzo, who is the guy from Asterix. He apparently, listen to this, this is a tribute to him in the Financial Times. A gracious and modest man, Albert Uderzo, was a little puzzled by the phenomenal appeal of Asterix, the quirky mustachioed cartoon character he created along with his friend René Goscinny. Perhaps the books were so popular because rebellious readers dreamt of drinking a little magic potion and biffing their bosses the same way Asterix scattered sundry Roman legionaries. Perhaps it was because they identified with the spirit of the indomitable Gauls, who bravely resisted the might of Julius Caesar's armies. Perhaps it was because they were amused by the affectionate way in which both the authors captured the foibles of the ancient forerunners of the French and lampooned the neighboring Britons, Spaniards, Germans, and Italians and Belgians. And it goes on to really give this guy credit. It finishes off by saying, Uderzo fell out with his one daughter, Sylvie, who managed his estate. He sold the rights to Asterix to the publishing firm Hachette, which has continued to publish albums since 2011 using a different writer and illustrator. Goscinny's daughter, Anne, recalled the two fathers of Asterix were very different people. Albert loved the countryside, he loved animals, he loved cars. My father detested the countryside, dogs weren't his thing, and a car for him was only useful for getting somewhere, she told Le Parisien newspaper. The two men were like fire and water, she said, but they worked together like brothers. So that's an interesting side story, just in case you were thinking about them. I can't believe that it's so interesting that he died just last week. And I had no idea until Gord mentioned it this morning. You see, some of your heroes just quietly go away. But that is a beautiful article, and thank you very much to Kate for sending it to me. All right, well, while we're trying to reconnect these guys, I don't know what the fuck they're doing. I'm going to just go to the messages because there are plenty of those building up here. Well, Gareth, what would you do if you were a police officer and people threw stones at you? Guys, you know, there's a difference between someone throwing stones at you or assaulting you as a police officer and you just climbing into them for no good reason. And we've seen some of that. I'm not talking about you retaliating to violence. You know, that's like it's covered in the law. It's called self-defense. And even police men and women have the opportunity and the right to defend themselves. So that's not even a question. But if it's going out and meeting out violence against ordinary people, it's just never acceptable. I can't believe people would stand up for this stuff. Eddie. Seriously. This is my first time listening for a long time. Good morning, guys. Oh, and screw you, Gareth. I've been running around my house irritating my family, screaming, coronavirus! For the last week, this has become such a thing. In fact, listen to this. I'm going to play this for you quickly. Fundo actually found a clip of coronavirus, which is hilarious. You want to hear this?
Shit is real! Shit is getting real! Shit is real! Coronavirus! Shit is real! Shit is getting real! Shit is real!
Okay, so you get the basic idea, right? I have still not received the link. I can only gauge by streaming from the app, which is a little behind. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't have you guys on. Mbulelo, email me the thing again. I can't seem to... It's not working for some reason. So just send me whatever link you guys are on, and then I'll try and reload it. This is not... this is not working out so well. Lockdown extension notification. Have you seen these joke things that are going around? Because today, of course, is April Fool's Day, in case you didn't know. And yes, we are living in dystopian Armageddon afterworld. And if this was an April Fool's joke, my God, it's just the sickest one of all time. I don't like it at all. And then got a message here from somebody who says, what happened to Ben? I feel I lost a friend. He was on the show this time last week, actually. So I don't know what you mean. Are you expecting to hear him every day? Because that stopped when he started his own business and didn't have the time to do it every day, which you should, I think all of us should understand. Stuff's going on, man. People got lives to live. And they don't necessarily have every day to be a part of this. I would love for Ben to be on more often, but he's got a big agency he's running now. What else is happening? Let me see here. We've got some headline news. It's almost time for that. Oh, later on, we're going to talk to Timothy Maurice, who I know everybody loves. I love talking to Timothy Maurice. He's been posting some workout videos on the roof of his building. He seems to live in the CBD in one of those very cool apartments that people in the CBD have if they're really beyond cool, which is what Timothy is. And Pamina Bora will join us. She's the Secretary General of the Italian Chamber of Commerce. And the reason we want to talk to her is because some of the plans and support structures that Italy has planned for the coronavirus might be applicable to us. And I thought, good idea to talk to her. They've been through it. They are a few steps further down the road than we are. And I'm certainly hoping that the lessons they've learned can translate into much cheaper lessons for us so that we aren't all stuck in a situation of just hell, like in Bergamo in Italy, where it's just really the most disastrous situation. I don't know how people are dealing with that. It's really, really messy. Okay, well, in the absence of this email, it's not coming through, guys. I'm sorry, there's just nothing coming through. In the absence of this email, I'm going to quickly break for a song, see if we can figure out what's going on here, and then reconnect in just a short while. So stick around for that. Interrupting my Madonna, you asshole.
Oh, excuse me. I don't know that I'm on air.
Shut up.
Oh, jeez. I remember.
What a bunch of assholes to interrupt that great song.
Says that Ford doesn't tell us we're on air.
All right.
Ford says it sounds like someone cleaning the blinds.
Oh, really? Thanks very much for that. I know
that song.
Yeah, all right, whatever. So we were busy talking about kids' books before we got horribly disconnected, and we thought we had control of the situation, but we went and lost it, as Sean Connery says. So I've managed to get the guys back on. All right, dudes, so we were talking about kids' books, and I know we can carry that conversation on in a minute because Gord's got lots to say about it. It's his new thing.
I was kind of done.
Oh, okay, all right.
But I did agree with you on Roald Dahl, but please continue.
All right, thank you. I'm glad you agreed. Roald Dahl is a goddamn genius. That was the first set of books I bought for my nephew, and I'm going to read through them with him come hell or high water. He will love Roald Dahl, or he will not be my nephew.
Oh, that's quite the condition.
Yes. All right, let's go to some stories in the news, and I want to hear what you guys think of this. First of all, there is a little bit of news. The petrol price will drop by almost 2 rand a litre on Tuesday night while all of us are stuck at home.
Yeah, while no one's using petrol, you guys can have a discount.
Exactly.
Because at this rate, it's going to take, like, if this continues, you'd use a tank a year.
Most motorists will not draw any benefit anytime soon, thanks to the lockdown. Fuel was not high in demand due to the COVID-19 travel restrictions, but those who need to fill up with petrol will see a whopping 1.94 rand price drop at the pump. How's that?
It's like being in a you know, your dream girl's always single when you're in a nightmare relationship.
Isn't it ironic?
Right.
Isn't it coincidental?
Motorists of the coast currently pay 15.20 rand for a litre. On Wednesday, that drops to 13.26 rand. The last time that they paid that was 2013.
Wow.
Yeah. Those driving diesel vehicles will benefit from a lower but still significant price cut of between 1.33 rand and 1.39 rand. That's due to obviously a fall in oil prices because no one's using fuel at the moment. The whole world's stopped. Dumb, dumb, dumb. All right. Another story. Apparently, and this is crazy, a security guard has appeared in court over the death of a 40-year-old man during a police lockdown operation over the weekend. The Ekurhuleni Metropolitan Police Department officer accused of involvement in the man's death has not faced any charges. The case was remanded until April the 8th for a formal bail application. His appearance follows the death of a guy called Sibusiso Amos, who is a 40-year-old Vosloo Rus man who was allegedly gunned down in his own backyard. Four children who were caught in the crossfire were hospitalized.
Jeez, like, because the oak went outside.
Yeah, he went outside into his own yard, and the police got a little heavy-handed. This is what I was talking about just
heavy-handed. They're shooting at him while kids were in between them and him. That's pretty heavy-handed.
That's psychopathic. That's what that is. And a lot of great policemen in the world. But my God, when you find a bad one, they are among the most terrible people that you will ever meet.
That guy is playing in the garden. That guy just behind the kids. Yeah. Are you sure that's his garden or the park? I don't know. I think
let's
it might
shoot
be
him
the park.
Anyway. Oh, let's shoot him now and ask questions later. You know, Becky Taylor, shoot to kill. This is what happens. Some people take it seriously. A children's home in Malvern and Durban, where 60 kids and 30 workers are under lockdown, has been forced to use swimming pool water and buy bottled water after having run out for 3 days in the last week. This is terrible. Vanessa Theophilus, who's the director of this child and youth care center, told Times Live that the home woke up to no water on Tuesday. They've got 60 kids and 30 staff who are on lockdown. They've had no water since last Monday night. It comes and goes, apparently. Putting them under tremendous pressure. They're dealing with children who are infected with or affected by HIV and AIDS. For 3 days within a period of 7 days, they've had no water. And try and get people out there to fix stuff now. If your geyser bursts now,
Yeah, I bragged about repairing my washing machine and how much better it was now that it's repaired. Yeah. And then it decided that it wanted to make a plastic melty sound and turn itself off. And now the dude came to fix it because he was told that he would be allowed to fix appliances like ovens and things during lockdown.
Yeah.
But the good people on the body corporate who've taken it upon themselves to deputize themselves as actually important decided that that was not the case.
Oh.
It sounds to me like you might be on my side and not on Pumi, Mbulelo, and Sia's side when it comes to busybody fucking activist citizens.
Oh, God.
Who feel they need to report other
prefects.
Citizens.
Everybody wants to be a prefect.
They're prefects.
Look, report someone if they're doing something like really untoward.
Or dangerous.
Report them if they're having the neighbors for bries every day. But like if they're just like strolling about the parking lot, like I did my first shopping since lockdown yesterday, and I was like surprised by how busy the shops were. And well, not like overly busy, but how kind of normalish they were. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that for a reason I won't bore anyone with, I went to one of the further away shops and like no one was stopping me and being like, why are you going to a 5 kilometer away shop? But, I saw a guy when I parked and unpacked my groceries. He was just strolling around the parking area of the complex taking a phone call. And my initial instinct was like, you're not allowed to do that. And then I was like, well, why not? He's talking on his phone. He's like just pacing back and forth in the parking lot, probably a change of scenery. I do get it, though, that if everybody went outside when they're not meant to go outside and if everybody congregated in the streets and the parking lot, but to have nothing better to do than to be like, ooh, you've technically broken a rule. You know, like, okay, if one of your neighbors is getting the other neighbors around for a bri and making friends with everyone in the complex, then sure. But like, or causing some sort of real disruption or, you know, being a nuisance in some way and affecting the thing. But like,
putting people at risk, sure. Then
to be keeping an eagle eye in case anyone steps slightly out of line because I've made myself a prefect. Yeah. Fuck off.
That's, you've just summarized it all beautifully, which you often do, Gord. That word.
Thank you, Gareth.
It's that word prefect. Those are the people I fucking hate. Do you know when I was a prefect and I caught people smoking behind, especially because I knew a lot of these kids and they were friends of mine. Like I wasn't a prefect who was only friends with the good kids. I don't even know how I became a prefect. Maybe because I was popular, not because I was one of the good kids, a duck scholar and the captain of the rugby team or any of that shit.
You guys could study ducks?
Well,
okay, God. Okay.
Well, I remember there was this one friend of mine who she would go and smoke behind the one building, and it was her place to go and have a cigarette. And she had a pretty tough life. She had like a, you know, a mom who was I think an alcoholic, and she had a tough time. And I knew that she was going through a tough time. And her cigarette was her one moment of peace during the day at school, because she didn't really get along with the cool kids, and she didn't really get along with the nerds, and she didn't get along with the jocks. And I wouldn't bust her. Other kids bust her all the time, other prefects. I never bust her. I didn't bust the smokers or rat on people who didn't need to be ratted on just because I had authority. You can see what kind of people would be shit leaders by the way they behave when you give them you give them a tiny bit of power and they behave
and importance.
So badly.
You are 1% more important than the average person,
right,
as a result of being on the body corporate. You're slightly better as a resident of fucking Calgaro Estate in goddamn glamorous Douglasdale. You're basically like the king of something beautiful, or queen, or gender nondescript royal. But you know, like my guy, I can live with hand washing my underwear for two more weeks. It's not going to be ideal. But what if it was my fridge or my oven? And Dave and Lovu, my brilliant appliance oak. Granted, he did a repair that was good for like a week and a half, but he's really good. he understands that he's allowed to work. So I'm not going to argue with Karin from the body corporate who, like in the same way everybody had to get PhDs in virology the day that Corona became a topic.
Yeah.
Similarly, Karins have all got like legal degrees now in interpreting the emergency and laws, they can tell you, because someone sent them a photocopied PDF in WhatsApp, they can tell you what the rules are. I sat with intelligent people trying to figure out whether we were able to ride our bicycles. It took a week, and then the government had to formally address, no, this is not allowed. But Karin will tell you what isn't allowed. What if your fridge, your oven, or your deep freeze needed to be repaired by a repair person while you're on lockdown? Is it not some sort of lockdown emergency that your means of cooking or preserving food has ceased to function?
You're not following the rules. I love the way, by the way, these Karins are suddenly big fans of Becky Tele and the government, the police.
But he believes, believes that he's allowed to work.
These are the same people, these prefects, are the same ones who 3 weeks ago were saying, I'm not paying my e-tolls, and if the police come here and they pitch up at my house, I'm not going to go and let them in without a warrant.
Yeah, I really hate beige insignificant. I hate beige people. But the thing is, this is a body corporate rule. So if the law says an O is not allowed to come in and fix my oven, fridge, or washing machine, okay. But the security at my place told him no, and they told me, talk to the body corporate. The body corporate have instructed the security guards how to deal with things like that. David is working, and he has been informed by the law that he's allowed to work. So anyone else that needs him can have him, because he asked the police, am I allowed to do my job? It's not that the cops stopped him. Karin and Debbie and Sandra fucking stopped him. And I could phone them and plead my case and have them go, let's decide whether to allow Gordon a washing machine. Should we have a little tribunal? Sally, get the WhatsApp group. Get the neighborhood WhatsApp group. We'll decide. We'll have a moot. We'll have an ent moot and decide whether or not he's allowed a washing machine. Fuck off. I'm allowed or I'm not, and I don't care about you, body corporate. Your job is to make sure the place gets painted once a year.
An end moot.
Job is to make sure that gardening happens once a week in the complex.
I know. Thank you for summarizing my feelings and the feelings of a lot of people.
Assholes.
Adrian Groenewald, who did the leadership platform, wrote a great article which addresses some of these things. He had an incident occur in the place where they live. And it's interesting. What I'm going to do is get Adrian on the show, and he can actually explain what happened, because it's really interesting. We do have headlines, though, and we kind of got... We got misdirected there.
Sidetracked is an understatement, to say the least.
All right, so throngs of refugees and children are still sitting on pavements in Cape Town. And the group of refugees in the vicinity of Cape Town Central Police Station live in a rickety plastic shelter. Few have formal tents. I mean, what is a formal tent?
It's not a makeshift tent. It's like a tent that has pegs.
Oh, okay, it's formal, is it? So does it have a bow tie as its outside decoration?
They typically are black with white bow ties. Yeah, they are exceptions. You get a navy and a pinstripe one. Anyway, not taking the piss. This is a horrible story. Go ahead.
On Tuesday, their children roamed freely while the parents slept, cooked over an open fire on the pavements, or crouched dispiritedly among their few possessions. Those holed up in the Methodist church stayed inside while a group of men manned the entrance. The two groups were initially housed in the church. Shortly after they were evicted from outside the UN High Commission for Refugees, they split in December after a leadership tussle, and now those living on the pavements have been kicked out. So Cape Town...
There's Karens even in charitable organizations.
Yeah, there are Karens everywhere, Gord, everywhere. So that's it is a sad situation. I don't know what the answer is here, but I know that homeless people can't be sleeping on the streets during an outbreak like this. Not only for the good of everybody in the community, because that is what is at question here, but also for themselves, for God's sake. They're exposing themselves and their children to unnecessary harm. And they're doing that anyway by living on the streets when there isn't coronavirus.
Yeah.
What about the hypocrisy of the religions here? What about blessed are the meek? Shouldn't all people on the street be allowed to live in churches now or not? Yeah. Is that only if you're very rich?
I'm not sure, because I'm not religious, but I'm always curious about why it's the Methodist Church that seems to be a beacon to the homeless. So this was the situation in the Joburg CBD for a long time with Zimbabwean refugees. It might still be, as far as I know. Why the Methodists? What have they done that allies them so closely to the homeless? What's the story there?
They've perfected their method. I don't know. Are you saying that they're unusually good to the homeless, or that they're unusually difficult?
No, they're good to the homeless, because the Methodist Church is usually a place of sanctuary for homeless people.
Good. Then I'm all for the Methodist Church. I mean, look, if you're gonna have a flat Earth society, have a pro bono charitable wing of it.
A flat Earth society.
Flat Earth is for everyone. Everyone is welcome on this beautiful flat earth. And there's a place for everyone on flat earth. Methodists are on that tip, so good for them.
All right. And finally, Chinese health authorities will include asymptomatic cases of novel coronavirus in their official counts starting Wednesday. You know what that means? It means people who are not showing that they have this coronavirus. There are lots of people who just carry on. They have the virus. They test positive.
Idris Elba.
Yeah, they test positive for it, but they don't show any symptoms. They're not coughing. They don't feel difficulty in breathing.
Those people are one of the main reasons for things like isolation, whether it's mandatory government lockdown or social distancing. It's because those people can have it and either be totally unaware of their symptoms or think they just have a minor cold and be just as contagious as anybody else for the whole 2-week period, and possibly a little bit before and possibly a little bit after. So for even in an extreme case, for 3 weeks, you could not know anything's wrong with you and be touching things and licking trolleys at supermarkets and all that normal shit, and
totally
that's
normal.
That's the person who's most dangerous to others.
It's totally normal.
Yeah, I don't remember going around licking trolleys last.
Did you
week.
See that video of the lady licking the trolleys and making coronavirus jokes?
No.
Oh God, of all of the horrific shit, like those videos of people partying, singing Corona, Corona. Like there's lots of that going around, and I try and avoid it because mostly it's just idiots being idiotic, and it's a circle of hate. But I saw one with this woman in a shopping center, like a ShopRite Checkers, and she's like laughing and singing the Corona song and licking the trolley. And I've never wanted to execute a person by handgun more in my life. I'll share the video with us. We can talk about it another time. Yeah. I'll share it with me offline, and you'll just lose all what little faith in humanity you have.
That
will
woman,
be gone.
I know who you're talking about. That woman's actually a medical doctor, and she believes in herd immunity.
Yeah, I believe in thinning the herd through Darwinism. So if the thing that she's doing could just kill her, that would be great.
Well, it
will kill her granny, who might look after her kids, and that's why she should be just shot in the head.
Well, we are doing a series called Living in Lockdown, and you've just reminded me of one of the people I interviewed yesterday. There will be a bunch of them coming up, so you can go to cliffcentral.com and listen to the stories of some really interesting and cool and connected South Africans, people who are friends of ours. We're checking in on them, seeing how life is going under lockdown. And I spoke to Sivungesi yesterday.
What a G.
Such a great guy. I spoke to Casper de Vries. I spoke to John T. Searle and Dr. Dennis Goodman, who's in California. And all of these people have interesting takes on what's going on, you know, with this pandemic, the lockdown, what they're doing to keep sane. And everybody's got an interesting story, so you might want to listen to that.
Mm. Cool. Awesome.
Yeah. What else is going on in the news of other people in the world?
Well, the Chinese say they're going to include those numbers. That's really all I need to tell you about that story. But if you're an asymptomatic case, up to now they said, well, we're not going to include you. America, according to the latest press releases from the White House, they are bracing themselves that they could lose 100,000 to 200,000 people in this. And believe it or not, that's still very low compared to heart disease, motor vehicle accidents, diabetes.
They're about 300 million, aren't they? Or 250 million, something thereabouts.
300's about right.
My buddy Rocco in New York has had it and recovering from it. I've got friends in London who have had it and recovering from it. South Africans, self-employed in the fitness industry, with Corona in London, it is not a good time for them.
Sure.
But my buddy Rocco has been, look, I won't say reveling in the attention, because that's not fair. He's quite an active person on social media, and he is an actor, and he's like a personality to begin with. Mm-hmm. But he's very much documenting his Corona on his Facebook and Instagram stories. And he's making a meal of how bad he feels, but he's been feeling pretty bad. He's coming out of it. He said the worst part of it was the coughing all night so you can't sleep, and to the point where you can't sleep. He's like, the cough abates during the day a little bit, but as soon as you lie down and try and sleep, you can't sleep. And then also a complete loss of sense of taste and smell. And after the first sort of 5 days or so of being really bad, then when he got into that second phase where you still feel bad but you're improving, he got to a point where he was like, cool, well, he can eat like something for joy. You know, he's been eating like what he can deal with. Like, he's been eating I'm very sick food, and now he wants to have a steak, because a steak has been what he's like, you know, craving for. And he videoed himself cooking the steak, and then he said he could not taste it. He said it was like chewing through you could feel it physically in his mouth, but not taste any part of it.
And like, I was so like, weird.
Damn, if your sense of taste goes, and I think it comes back. But yes, imagine you lose your sense of taste and smell forever. I know there are conditions where that does happen, but it's very rare.
Yeah, that would freak me out completely. I've never, ever lost my sense of taste. I mean, sometimes when you have a blocked nose, you can't smell properly, but you can still taste everything. It's so weird.
Yeah.
And this
well,
is one
not
of
as
the,
well.
This is one of the symptoms. A friend of mine in New York said they are actually using the Javits Center, which is where I went for a conference in October. Sia, you remember the Javits Center. They're using that as a makeshift hospital at the moment.
Look, between that, and I also saw some images of a pop-up hospital that's now being built in Central Park.
Yeah.
All of these images are quite haunting.
Oh, it's scary, man.
Well, the whole major thing about this whole thing is that it overwhelms healthcare systems. Like, if this was the exact same illness, but not as contagious as rapidly, it would just be another flu. Like, it's not all flus can kill you. All flus, some have a higher mortality rate than this. It's the fact that it's just so contagious. This thing survives on so many surfaces. It's so easy. It's airborne. It's like, it wants you to catch it very, very badly. And if everybody catches the same serious sickness at once, that 5% or 10% that need hospital overwhelm the healthcare system. It wouldn't be that big of a deal otherwise.
Gord, thanks for that information, Karin.
People should not be allowed to overwhelm the healthcare system. Stop them right
stop
now.
Stop them. Stop.
Or
them
I'll send a WhatsApp to the group if you don't stop overwhelming the healthcare.
Gord, have you learned anything profound in the last week? And I'm talking about big things here, because we're all being forced to consider first principles. The things that we love, the things that we live for, what we used to do every weekend that we would look forward to, the people in our lives, everything is coming into massive and stark contrast now. And I'm curious if there's any profound observation that you've made. And Mbulelo, feel free to jump in on this. And you, Sia, if you've suddenly realized, Like, something dawned on me last night. I'll get to that later, but you go first, Gord.
I came to realize that the things that I love and used to do for fun as a kid are still the things that I love and would like to do for fun, except now I've learned enough to maybe possibly monetize them and make them into a commercially viable thing. And I feel when there's a sense of purpose in what I'm doing, like it's to bring joy and a degree of education and maybe some positively intended perspective to kids and grown-ups that don't mind a bit of a kid's vibe, suddenly once you feel like there's a purpose to what you do, other than you don't want to go out and jaw as much, you don't want to like get it over and done with so you can spend the evenings and the weekends doing your life and you've got to do your job to facilitate doing your life, I've come to realize like there's stuff that I love to do and that it is actually marketable stuff. And suddenly like life just feels like it has so much more purpose. And it's been really profound, actually. I really don't want to go back to what I was doing before, and I'm willing to liquidate myself entirely if necessary to try and make everything work.
And by liquidate, you don't mean you're going to put yourself through a juicer. You're actually going to take
I will sell the PlayStation on eBay.
You will sell everything you have in order to chase the stream. I think that's
100%. I will. Absolutely, I will. And then I'll borrow what I don't have to carry on after that.
Do you know what I also like about the point that you just raised, Gord, is that you aren't saying, you know, my passion matters so much. Literally, there's like nothing else that matters.
That's exactly what I'm saying, Sia.
No, but
that's literally no. That's the best summary of what I just said.
Possibly. Whenever I hear people speak like that, I'm like, honey, well, do you want to live under a bridge? Yeah. I think you found the perfect crossroads of realizing that you can still lead this passion or purpose-led life and still make money off it. And there's nothing wrong with making money.
And dude, it's all stuff that I've known my whole life. It's all things I love to do. It's how I used to spend the time lying on my front, drawing and writing this crap while my parents had raging arguments or watched the news or both every evening for my entire childhood. And like, this is what I used to do when I had to choose what to do.
Can I just say it's taken you fucking long enough?
I've used the same skill set to make crap ads no one cares about, to sell crap product no one needs, and made a reasonably decent living for myself using what I like, using the abilities that I learned. But I just need to go back to doing what I was doing instinctively as a child, and I feel like good in my soul again, like a kid. I feel less corrupted as an entity. I haven't like suddenly become like Eckhart Tolle's spiritual twin, but I feel like what I'm doing is good, and I'm not like fucking myself or the world by being a manufacturer of plastic bottles on purpose.
Have you made any deep and meaningful observations, Mbulelo and Sia?
I personally haven't. I think I'm probably
so shallow.
Like, I think, you know, I'm always, you know, it's very easy for all of us now to, we live in a society based on piety, right? Everybody wants to sound like they've made that breakthrough. And if you have, fair enough to you. I'm not going to, it's not my place to say, but I'm probably waiting for the aftermath to see if people are really going to change, because I think we need to be careful in life is, you know, especially in this Instagram, Facebook time, is everybody wants to be what they say, not what they do. And in my eyes, you're what you do, not what you say. So,
but you raise a very important point there about people and the piety and all of that, and talking about, people love to talk about the thing and not do the thing. And I don't know whether my thing will make a difference to the world, but it's making a difference to me. The point is, the one question I asked earlier about what would you do if you could do whatever you wanted to do for a living? Now, again, not the squillions of a brand lottery thing. They're like, I would like to work with, you know, disadvantaged animals or whatever. What is that thing that so many people have no idea? They know, I don't want to do this. I'm tired of the traffic. I'm tired of Excel spreadsheets. I'm tired of the way the boss organizes meetings. You know, like,
and the best,
but, okay,
the best,
but what would you like to be doing? I have no idea.
The best metaphor for that is, imagine getting into your car when you're not in lockdown and driving somewhere without knowing where you're going. Like, it's easy to say, I don't want to go to Hillbrow.
Exactly.
But you have to know where you do want to go.
What people need to figure out, and that exactly, Gareth, and that's also a thing where people are like posting crap canned memes of badly spelled philosophy that there's someone else wrote about, like, take this time to reconnect with your soul. It's like, well, what do you mean?
Yeah, well,
you're taking a break and you're trying to post on Facebook to make it spiritual. Like, what are you actually reconnecting with? Did you play the banjo as a child and that was the only time you were happy in your childhood, and now you've dusted off the old banjo and, hey, you're rusty, but my God, it feels amazing. Like, or have you never had a banjo and now you're trying to find your banjo, as opposed to posting shit philosophy memes on Facebook talking about how that's something we're all doing.
Can I read you the biggest steaming pile of shit ever and just hear what you think of this?
Read me the steam.
Right. Oh. Now, this is from a girl I used to follow on Instagram. Are you ready?
Mm.
Listen to this. This means absolutely zero. You can try to find a meaning in it if you're really doing the mental gymnastics, but I guarantee you.
Does it have a sunset as a background?
Even worse. I'm not going to tell you what the picture is, but here's the...
It's a bikini shot.
Here's the caption. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
There's a system in place that allows you to feel every good decision. Until we choose better, refine your rhythm to collapse into presence. Grateful for the embodiment of care, making visible unconscious reactions and infusing autonomy with unconditional love. We sought out to find others like us. Interested in ourselves, we deepened our listening and strengthened our shells.
No, fuck. That's made by a random word generator or manatee balls from South Park. You know that episode? Yeah, where they write a series of Family Guy by throwing ideas into a giant aquarium and letting the manatees pick the ideas and put them together in whatever sentence it makes. That's what the episode's about.
Have you ever had such shit in your life?
Just give it to us one more time, because I'm actually going to genuinely try and figure out what it's meant to mean.
There's a system in place that allows you to feel every good decision.
Okay, but I think they mean that they want that to be the system. I think what it's meant to say is that that is not currently the system, but a possible system like that exists.
Until we choose better.
Okay, that makes sense. Those are words. They make sense.
Refine your rhythm to collapse into presence.
It's a bunch of bullshit. That's about living in the moment, which is not total bullshit, but when worded like that, it's total bullshit, yeah.
Grateful for the embodiment of care, making visible unconscious reactions and infusing autonomy with unconditional love.
Absolute bullshit. I mean, what it's meant to mean is, like, do good without thinking about it and let your care for other people manifest unconditionally in your actions. But it's written in – that is Wankanese, and it's written in – it's not that – it's not only Wankanese, it's old Wankanese. You know how, like, I've got my Zulu homies that they speak Zulu, but when they go up, like, back into, like, where their family comes from, into, like, a deep KZN, they don't fully understand the elders, because there's, like, old school Zulu and there's, like – colloquial Zulu. Yeah. That's like old school Wankanese. Even the modern wanker society don't fully speak. That's like the Chaucer English of wanking.
Oh my God. All right, Gordo, we got to go. Thank you for joining us.
Love you guys.
Goodness. Jeez.
Good Lord. Teaching us.
It has been the embodiment of the fluidity of soul to connect. To connect internetually with these intellectual balance. Let us come forth and let us together manifest the other.
Refine the rhythm of your soul.
I'll collapse into it. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye, Gordo. Good laws, everybody. Sia and Mbulelo and I are here with you, and we're going to be joined in a moment by Timothy Maurice, who is a good friend of ours. Eleanor Williams, who we had on the show not so long ago. Find out about how she's dealing with lockdown. And what she's currently working on as well. Plus, as if that isn't enough, we're going to speak to Pamina Bora, who is the Secretary General for the Italian Chamber. Maybe some lessons from Italy that we could learn here in South Africa. Things that might help us to not make the same mistakes, or perhaps do things a little bit better. Also about Italian business in South Africa and how business in general is suffering at the moment. Plus, as if that isn't enough, Fueling Futures with Timothy Maurice, as I mentioned, and Sivengesi Living in Lockdown a little later on. It's a bumper show for you today. So much to get to. So many things going on. You've come to the right place. CliffCentral.com